Okay. Hey, it's Carol Tice here with Linda Formicelli. And it's technically the pre-show. I'll do an actual introduction in about 5 minutes. But we wanted to just, fire people up, give them some inspiration. And, I just want to say that I feel like one of the biggest fears out there is just you'll do this wrong and then you will be ruined and your career will be over. And I'm just here to say that that totally doesn't happen. My breaking story was I entered a couple essay contests and won them both, and both of those publications asked me to write for them. But the alternative paper, the article I did as a follow-up, got killed. Like, I had no idea what I was doing whatsoever. I had like a book's worth of information for some, 500-word article, and it was just a mess what I turned in. John, we're not going to make you the presenter. Why would you want to be the presenter?
And Robin needs to be muted. Can you mute
Or did you
Robin's
hit that?
line?
Or did you maybe hit that accidentally? Yeah, let me look back at audio.
There we go. Oh
Everybody,
yeah, I guess you could. You guys can mute your.
hang on, Linda. I just have to unmute you. Yeah, I don't know
Got in.
why. I don't know why it's not bringing everyone in muted like it's supposed to. That's really annoying.
Yeah, if you can, everybody, you can possibly mute yourself.
Yeah, if people could just make sure the mute on their
And
end,
Alyssa,
otherwise we get a lot of audio junk.
okay. And it says Alyssa was listening only. If for some reason you're listening now and you can't get on the chat, you can always email one of us or email lindaformicelli@gmail.com,
Yeah, my
and I
email
will
is
just
not
check that
on.
occasionally.
E
Yeah.
email Linda, because I am not on.
Yeah. So I
People
can,
are
in case.
pressing buttons that say, "Can you make me the presenter?" I'm not sure if that's accidental, but the answer is no, I am not making you the presenter.
Could you make me a co-presenter that way?
I don't know. Let's see. Maybe that would help us. Let's
Oops.
see. I will make you a presenter. Well,
Yes,
my
I'm the
worry is
presenter.
that you will be the person who has to download the chat log at the end of the
Oh, yeah, it wants me to download and switch the desktop meeting,
Yeah.
desktop version, which I have, but no. Okay, fine. I don't need to be a presenter.
Okay, well, I think it helps us just in terms of when I'm muting people out. I think now it will not mute you. Yes, no, it's still muting you. That's not fair. It's always something.
Okay. Well, we have a few minutes. Do you want to talk about any horror stories? Or I have
Well,
a horror
no,
story.
you totally interrupted my story about how my first
Oh, I thought you
missing
were done with your
article got
story.
killed.
Sorry.
Well,
Continue,
I
please.
mean, I've also been fired from a staff writing job. I just want to say that a typical freelance career has bumps and lumps to it. Things happen. Not every client situation works out. New editors come to your gig and they hate you and get rid of you, and it's not about you. And the good news is there is no universal editor network that they're going to notify to never hire you again. There's a million prospects in the naked city, and you just move on to other ones and emphasize the good stuff in your portfolio, and you just keep going. So, I if I had one big message for everyone, it's just like relax. It's okay. You can experiment, you can do things, and maybe they won't be the right thing the first thing you do, but it'll be okay. It totally will be. So that's my main, message here with it. Anyway, you have any other thoughts? We got 2 more minutes.
Yes. I have several horror stories. I'm trying to think of what the worst one is. There's one time where I was first starting out and I sent out a sales letter, a snail mail sales letter to, I don't know, maybe 200 people, and I bragged that I know how to spell words like syzygy, onomatopoeia, and there was some other one, and somebody emailed me and pointed out that I spelled syzygy wrong.
That's a great
And
one.
I was just so humiliated. But that said, I actually did really well with my snail mail campaign. I got 11% response rate and enough gigs to start making a living pretty quickly. So even things like that aren't going to kill you.
And that's actually one of the things that is in the homework challenge, is to send out a query letter that has a typo in it.
Yeah, and we've
Yeah.
all done that, but not on purpose.
Right.
So
But we're asking you to do it on purpose. just to get over the idea that you have to be perfect, because you don't. Okay. So just want to leave you with that little, you know, shot of encouragement as we get ready to get started at the top of the hour here. I think everyone seems to be muted, but it is weirding me out. If we get more noise, I may have to just mute again, which keeps muting you. The only way to solve that, I believe, is to make you the organizer, and then you would have to grab the chat at the end and stuff. So,
okay. I think it's okay. Oh, let me get your question, Bridget.
Yeah, I think I still have the chat log saving power as we currently stand, but we'll see how annoying it is with people going in and out and making sound. If everyone, if you're just joining us, if you can please mute on your end, we're having a little bit of trouble with our GoToMeeting not automatically muting people as they come in. So just be sure. Ha, Brigitte, great question. Is snail mail still used, or is email preferred? By who? Yeah.
Well, I mentioned the snail mail sales letters. I think she's talking mm-hmm. about that, but I put the question in the log.
Cool.
Okay.
Oh, that's a bummer, Alyssa. If you have a smartphone, try that. I guess you can't hear.
Will the audio be posted?
Yeah. It usually takes us a day to get recordings up, so... just give us a day and we'll get it up. Mm-hmm. That's so frustrating, though. Alyssa asks so many questions. But we're going to answer them. All right. We're going to officially get started now. Hi, everybody. This is Carol Tice. I am here with the lovely Linda Formicelli.
Hey there.
And we are excited to be at the first coaching call for this special supported session of Write Big, a Fear Busting e-course for freelance writers. Yay! We're excited to get over the fears that are holding you back from the freelance career you want and find concrete actions you can take to move your career forward. Just a housekeeping thing to get started. We're hoping you all have access to your course materials. I got a couple of reports from people who were hitting the help desk and hadn't gotten responses, and you know I was on their case immediately, and I'm hoping that everyone is seeing and going through the materials. And if not, you just want to email help@usefulwritingcourses.com, and they will get you rolling. It's really been exciting to be on the Facebook. And, you know, that's not a mode we've done for a lot of our classes, but it's been fun for introductions and seeing where everyone is from and sort of the different situations and reasons that they're coming into the chat. We had about no questions as of midday yesterday, and then this avalanche of questions came. So just disclosure that we haven't had a ton of time to prepare answers, but we do have some links for you, and we obviously are here to help you brainstorm and come up with good ideas. And just one thing I want to spotlight before we dive into questions is to encourage everyone to get going on the homework challenges. And you'll see the homework in sort of the end of module one of the course. And the handout says we ask you to do three to like get the certificate and check off that you really did all the materials in the class. But we really want to encourage you to do all of them if you can. If you have no current clients, I believe there's one that you may not be able to do. But don't think about doing the minimum here. This is about, you know, busting out of your lack of action and taking a lot of actions. So just really want to encourage people to go for as many of these as you can, because the more you take action and the less you sit around worrying, the more the fear goes away. And post your progress in the Facebook page. We have definitely not seen all of our students over there yet, so let me throw a link to that right into the chat. Come on over there and give us a join request, and we'll get you in there so you can chat and, you know, maybe find an accountability buddy, ask questions, get support. That's your place all this month through the 31st. Linda and I will be in there, and you're free to continue, you know, as a support group yourselves. One big thing I want to say before we get rolling on these specific questions is that a lot of sort of beginning freelance questions can be answered, it depends. Like the one that we just had is snail mail or email preferred. It depends. Really. So I just want you to all bear that in mind. There sort of isn't one right way to do this in freelance writing. There's a lot of variables. It depends on what kind of writing you do, what kind of markets you're going after, and what kind of marketing you feel comfortable doing. My joke is always that the best kind of marketing is the kind you're willing to do, and that you won't just procrastinate and put off because you really hate that kind and you won't do it ever. So there are some industry norms, but there's a lot of variables that you basically ask your client about or negotiate with that client and work out as you go. Linda?
You know, that's true. I get a lot of questions from writers saying, the editor said this. What do they mean? What do I do? And
Is
the
that
only thing I can
normal?
possibly say is, yeah, is that normal? It's ask the editor. If you don't understand what they want in an outline or what this contract clause means, I can't guess any more than you can. And it's always fine to ask somebody if you don't understand. But also, riffing off of what Carol just said, we're seeing it in the Facebook group, a lot of what we call fears that start with, I don't know how to. And at first I was thinking, wow, these are all just questions about freelancing, not about fears. But I understand now that the fear is, I don't know how to do it. And every time you tell yourself, I don't know, it's an excuse that keeps you from having to risk the discomfort of going for it right now. You say, well, I really want to do this, but I don't know how to get a source to talk, or I don't know how to build a website. So we're going to try to answer in this class some of the most common questions we get in these calls and on Facebook, just so you do know a way that works for many writers and you get past at least those common ones. But in general, if you don't know, the trick is to try to quickly find out. To do a quick and dirty search, ask somebody. If you can't quickly find out, then figure out your own way of doing it just so you can get moving. If you're not sure how to address an editor in a pitch, or get a source to do an interview, or write a call to action, or build a website, or ask for a testimonial, or display your portfolio, or anything, just figure out a way that works for you and get to it so you can move on to the next thing. Like Carol was saying, there's no one right exact way to make your career happen. Every client is different. Every situation is different. There are really no rules. And while it's definitely easier to have all the tactics and facts lined up before you start, and of course you'd be silly not to take advantage of being able to ask more experienced writers for advice, it's also fine to just make it up as you go along. I had one coaching client recently who was stalled on her website because she couldn't figure out how to display her portfolio. And truly, it does not matter. There is probably no client that is going to say, boy, if only this writer had put up PDFs instead of links to online articles, I would have given her the assignment. It's just not happening.
No.
So it doesn't matter. Just make it up, move on. And you don't forget, you can always go back and fix things if you decide that's not working for you or you don't like how it turned out or the results aren't what you wanted.
Yeah. So I'll just give you one more tip and then we're going to go into the questions. I think that something that can make a big positive difference is something I sort of did accidentally because I got into freelance writing accidentally. I was a singer-songwriter and I wrote this essay about being a singer-songwriter and someone paid me $200 and all of a sudden I was like, whoa, I found the kind of writing that pays. And all of my fears were around stage, live stage performance, which if you think anything in freelance writing is terrifying, go put on a short dress and stand up in a club and sing in front of some people. And you will find out how wonderfully non-scary freelance writing is. But so because I came from it out of this really, for me, terrifying creative background of live performance, to me, freelance writing was just so fun. It was like I just thought of it as this crazy adventure. I was like, whoa, I discovered this crazy thing, print freelance writing. I'll just like see what it's like and try things and see if they work. And they just kept working, you know? So I just think if you can recast it from, scary dream career that I'm worried I'll fail at to wild madcap adventure that I'll experiment with and, see what happens. You'll just have a lot less stress and a lot more fun, and you'll do more experimenting. You'll go on more fishing expeditions where you just try stuff and see what pans out, and you'll get end up getting a lot more gigs. So with that, we're going to go into the questions. And do you want to respond to this one from Heidi? I did in the chat real quick, but go ahead.
Yes. Hold on. Let me get back in there. I was just, if you could copy Deb's question in, that would be great. So yes, Heidi says, is this only for beginners? I've been doing it for a while. It's more about building a better pipeline and reaching out to my network, which is sometimes scary. And yes, the Write Big class is for all levels of writers who are stuck by fears of any kind. And I know that we are responding to some questions that are more about the beginning stage of freelance writing. But in the lessons themselves, in the course materials, we address common situational fears that you will run into, including reaching out to people, networking, and so on, and also more generalized fears that keep a lot of freelancers back at any level, like perfectionism, fear of failure, fear of success, and things like that. So I hope that answers that question.
Yeah, I feel like there's sort of two waves of fear. There's that fear of sort of getting started, and then you kind of get launched, but you're earning really crummy pay for crummy clients. And there's that fear that you're not good enough to write at really pro rates and for really great clients and markets. And I feel like that's the big second hump to get over that I, you know, do a lot of work with in Den2X Income Accelerator, which if anyone is a mid-career writer, they might want to check out. I'll put the link in chat in a minute. But for now, I want to get on Alyssa's questions, of which there were many, and I'm hoping maybe she can hear us now. It looks like maybe she can. Her first one was, what are the key components to include on a writer website, especially if you're just starting out and have very little experience? You know what? I think I actually have a post about that, exactly, of what to put on your writer website when you're a newbie. So I'm going to pop in a link to that. But you know, there's a general rule that you pitch with what you've got that I think will answer a lot of the questions we got here. Like she said, does writing have to be published online or in print to be included in a portfolio? Or can you include writing you've done that hasn't been published? If you don't have any writing that's been published, then you're probably going to include some writing that hasn't been published because that's what you got. You pitch with what you got. And as you go, you keep improving that portfolio and substituting out, you know, less awesome things to more awesome things. That's all you do. And she says, what about editing friends' personal statements for medical fellowships and residencies? Editing is a tougher thing to do. It's more of a referral relationship kind of business. But if you have like the raw one and then the draft you got and then the edit that you did, that can be useful if you're looking for editing gigs. Then she talks about whether or not to list rates. I'm not a fan of putting up rate sheets on writer website.
I am.
You are. The exception is if you find you're just getting a tremendous number of really lowball clients that are really wasting a lot of your time and energy, then it's great to put, you know, my rates started at $35 an hour or 50 or whatever they are. Or, you know, I write at 50 cents a word and up or something. If you're looking to just screen people out, I do know people who had that problem and did something like that, but you don't want to do, you know, I write blog posts for $100 a piece and my rate for this is this, because you don't know anything about that client yet, how difficult they are to work with, how complex their material is, how short their deadlines are, how much you enjoy working with them. You know, there are so many variables. Just don't lock yourself in. And the big thing I learned from my first really big web content development client is the point of a writer website is not to tell the prospect everything they need to know about you. It's to intrigue them and get them to call you or email you. You don't want to fill them in on every possible detail so they can safely conclude you're not the writer for them and move on. You want to present put your best foot forward, kind of dazzle them with whatever you can and get them to email you. So, you know, giving them detailed rate sheets, it's too much information that they could go, oh, well, I can't afford that. And, you know, maybe that was an incredible brand that you would have come down in price to work for. And now you've blown them off, you know, so that's why I'm not a fan.
My view
Oh, go ahead.
My view is that you put up a range And definitely not your hourly rate, because you don't want to be micromanaged, and you're also not selling time. You're selling your skills and the value you offer, but you put up a range, so it does screen out people who are coming to you possibly with a lowball offer, but it also is broad enough that it covers different situations. For example, things that are more research intensive, or somebody that you really, really want to write for, willing to work a little bit less. There's something else I wanted to mention based on what you just said with intriguing them. Oh, you know, you mentioned intriguing them about you, getting them to contact you, and not telling them everything about yourself. And I've been wanting to write an article about how every additional sentence you write, whether it's in a pitch, an email, your website, is another opportunity for somebody to judge you and decide you are not the right person for them.
Totally.
Because I get these emails that are long, long, long life stories, you know, then a question at the end. And every sentence in that life story, you know more about that person. And if you were the kind of person that would judge somebody or have preconceptions about certain types of people, that is going to be a killer for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, brevity is good. Yeah, I was taught, like, never put more than 250 words on a web page. Short, short, short. Make them call you. You know, if you need more detail, put another page. But keep it really concise. So, great question. How do you know when to raise your prices or when you're asking too much? You know when to raise your prices when you don't like how much you're earning and how many hours you're working. Then it's time, and you're fully booked is another indicator. If you're fully booked at crummy rates, it is time to raise your rates and see who goes away. And then you make the same and do less work. And you know when you're asking too much when you are quoting people and never getting gigs. Though that may also mean that you're just identifying the wrong clients.
Yeah, going for the wrong clients, because yeah. I think there's somebody out there for every price point.
Yeah, I mean, you should know that there are plenty of clients out there at real professional rates, people paying $100, $200, $300, $400, $500 a blog post, you know, paying $5,000 for white papers. And there is real work out there at real rates and lots of it. And actually, in a couple of weeks, I'll be doing a call about the $35,000 to $50,000 book ghostwriting niche. So there's lots of clients willing to pay professional rates. Mark just asked about simple website builders for technophobes. Yeah, I have a couple of resources, and I'll grab you that page link in a second. There's a couple places I recommend, one of which does nothing but write your websites for you and has it all templated where you don't have to know how to code. So a client is offering me a year's worth of writing 3 articles a week, but wants to reduce my previously confirmed rate of 11 cents a word. I'll just say that the lowest I ever wrote for was 30 cents a word, like ever, 20 years ago, 30 cents a word. And he wants to reduce it to 2 cents a word. Only you can decide if you want to take this kind of client. I wouldn't go anywhere near it. That's a huge volume of work at a very low rate. That's really going to chain you to a low level of pay. I would just tell them that your rates aren't changing. This is your rate. Maybe they'd like to do 2 articles a week at 11 cents a word instead of 3, because hiring a good writer would be worth it. And if not, she says, I have a full-time job. I'm not desperate to keep the money. I personally would put the time into prospecting myself. Yeah, Linda also has a comment, which is good because then I can look up more links to put in.
Yes. So Alyssa also mentioned that I'm willing to do the work if they'll pay since it's a long-term contract and they've been on time and accurate with payment for the last 5 months. And I want everybody to know that on time and accurate with payment is the lowest bar. Every client you work for, including the ones that pay, you know, $2,000 an article or $200 a blog post or whatever, they should all pay you on time, and they should all pay you accurately. And the fact that somebody pays you on time and accurately is not a reason to go with them if they are not paying what you want. So I'm just saying that's not a special thing. They should, everybody does that. I'm not sure if I'm really articulating this correctly, but I just don't want you to go for writing for 2 cents a word because they pay you on time. I mean, if you write for $2 a word, they should pay you on time.
Yeah, you know, all of these really, really low paid places that we pay daily, we pay weekly. That's because that is the only plus to working for them, is they are for the truly desperate, cash starved people who, you know, can't wait 2 weeks to get paid. That's who they're for. So if that's not you, you know, you just do not have to go there. And, you know, pro clients don't bring up stuff like that. We pay promptly. Like they're running on the assumption that whatever you say in the contract to pay on net 7 days, net 14, they're going to pay on it. You know,
that's their business.
It's not even a point of discussion. Yeah, it's just how we do business. Is I look at my contract, I pay as I'm obligated to do, you know. But that is, you know, that whole, oh, we pay very promptly. That's like the sound of your jail cell door clicking shut, you know, on what is going to be really like almost a slavery level situation. You know, 2 cents a word, that's just, you know, what you need to understand is clients like that are looking for hobbyists. They're not looking for professional writers. They're not even expecting that, you know, that's like a bonus if they find that. But they expect that these are like housewives who maybe want to earn a little, you know, movie money. And I know because I've interviewed people who have started these kind of platforms. I say, you know, who's your writer? Who do you think will do this? And that's what they say. They're like, oh, we think it's, you know, something for people who want a little extra money. Our mistake is thinking this is a way to earn a living on these kind of platforms. It just isn't. So how do you get into writing white papers? You start getting B2B business clients who might need them and then upsell them. That's how you start looking for clients who need them. White papers don't tend to be a first project that you'll get cold, especially if you've never done one. They tend to be an upsell to an existing client. You know, you've been writing their blog, and then maybe you do a special report for subscribers. And then you say, hey, you know, what about some white papers that would help build your authority? Is kind of the most typical thing. She said, I have experience writing college research papers and grant proposals. Neither of those really bear any resemblance to white papers. And, you know, there's a lot of information out there about what white papers. And inside my Freelance Writer's Den community, we have an awesome four-session bootcamp from Steve Slonwhite, the man, on how to write white papers, where you leave with kind of a sample of a part of a white paper. And you can do it independently. So, and it says, can you suggest something to add to a portfolio that might be indicative of competence with longer format technical papers? I don't know what that, maybe that's technical writing. I'm not sure. If you can clarify, Alyssa, if you can hear me. And several people asked, when can we get in Freelance Writer's Den? In January, if you want to get in on that ghostwriting bootcamp, if you're a non-member, that is going to be a $297 ticket. And it's the bargain of the century. We're compacting a course that she usually charges $4,000 for. And other than that, regular opening probably in March. So let's move on to Brigitte's questions.
Okay, so are we at the question here?
Brigitte from Houston?
Yes, I know. I'm looking for, because the question I answered of hers, I already answered this on Facebook, but I wanted to bring it up on the call too, to make sure it gets into the recording. She said, the majority of my journalism work was 18 years ago, and the submittal process, social media, and even the audiences have changed. I can research, interview, and write strong, engaging stories, but I need the tools. And I wanted to mention that I've been freelancing. This is my 20th year. I went full-time freelance in 1997, started getting assignments in 1996, so I've been there through it all. And yes, there are a lot of new social media and content mills and marketing gurus telling you what to do and forums and classes. But if you had success 18 years ago pitching and writing and keeping your clients happy and you enjoyed doing what you were doing, you can do it the exact same way right now. However you were pitching back then will still work today. They are still looking for the same basics of great ideas and great pitches, and great writing, and you don't need to let yourself become overwhelmed and confused learning all of these new techniques that have come up, because really the basics are the strongest.
Yeah, it's true. You know, great story. I know people freak out a lot about, you know, what's going to happen to great investigative journalism and storytelling. And it's just online now. There's tons of it. I actually was just reading Columbia Journalism Review's best articles of the year. And there was just amazing, amazing stuff in there. I also wanted to say, you know, some segues, if you've done, you know, journalism, like newspaper reporting, and you've done, first of all, you've done technical writing, that never goes out of style. If you want to pitch some clients for that, you know, that is the best paid niche out there, probably besides ghostwriting books. Writing profiles, you know, business journals are still just featuring those every day. And but the other thing is to look at trade magazines in, you know, maybe tech, or to look at brand journalism, which might be the new thing that you didn't see 18 years ago. And that's where you're writing a magazine article. It's usually online. And the only difference really between what you were doing before and now is who signs your check. Because I've done fully reported like $2 a word articles for American Express, for a website they were developing for the mid-market business sector, for instance. So there's a lot of opportunity to leverage that and work with brands as well. And, you know, we can talk more about that if you want. So she also said, is it better to specialize on a topic or keep it broad? I hesitate to answer this because what you don't want to be is a generalist. I just take a little of this, a little of that, a little of this, a little of that. You want to build expertise in an area, and the easiest way to get gigs is to have clips in the niche that you want to get the gig in. So, you know, I like people to have several niches just to be sort of diverse in case, you know, the real estate industry implodes. You're not only a real estate writer. But Linda has a comment too on this.
This comment actually goes back to talking about being out of the business for 18 years and how it's changed. And actually, that is a big fear that I see from a lot of people, because a lot of women especially get into the business and then they might take off for years to raise their kids or whatever, and then they get back into it. And their huge fear is, oh my God, it's so different, I don't know how to get back in. So the answer I mentioned before applies. It hasn't changed all that much. It just looks like it's changed, but if you know the basics, then they're always going to be relevant.
And the big thing to know is there's no such thing as clips that are too old to use.
No.
Use
or
them.
Too small, too old, too small, don't care.
Yeah, too different from the thing you're pitching. Doesn't use what you got and start looking for a way to get a clip, even if it's pro bono, that's fresh and new, to freshen up your portfolio as fast as you can. So Tess was asking about how to write effective queries and include expert quotes in them, and how do you get them when you don't have an assignment yet? And I know you have an answer to that.
Yeah, I answered it on Facebook, but again, I wanted to get it on the recording. And again, this is one of those I don't know how to fears, and it's a really common one. So hopefully this will help people with that hurdle, that particular hurdle. Oh my God, I just spilled a drink on my laptop. That's
no.
Awesome.
No.
It's still good. It's still good. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Tess. So her question is on including expert quotes in your pitches. And how to do that, how to get those experts to talk to you when you don't have an assignment in hand. And my trick for getting experts to talk when you don't have an assignment is to call or email and say, oh, I'm working on an article pitch for X, and I was wondering if I could talk to you for a few minutes and get a few quotes, and then if I get the assignment, I'll be back in touch for a more in-depth interview. And where I say pitch for X, if you're pitching to multiple publications or multiple types of markets, just pick the one or two most impressive sounding ones. And then also, if you have a website or a LinkedIn, definitely put it in the email, because the person can follow it and see that you are a real writer and not just, you know, some random person off the street trying to waste their time. And then a little flattery never hurts. Like, oh, I saw you wrote this book on the same topic, and I would love to have your insights. So don't overthink it. They usually say yes, it's just as long as you come across as professional.
So we just had someone's video feed just pop into the call for no apparent reason.
That was probably me,
trying to clean up the drink.
Oh, anyway. My God. This is like the third time this has happened in the last couple of months.
No. So Bob said he could not be here, but he said, my biggest fear is just not knowing how to get started, leaving me in deer in the headlights mode. And my answer, which is only partly humorously meant, is the place to get started is somewhere. Start somewhere. Rather than continuing to sit at home wondering what the one best, fastest, lowest cost way is to start your freelance writing career, start trying things. Start introducing yourself, networking, telling people what type of writing you want to do. Start actively identifying possible prospects and reaching out to them. Try calling on the phone. Try sending an email. Try sending a snail mail. Try in-person networking events. You know, this is how every business startup succeeds, is market testing. Your experiment is, I think I could launch a freelance writing business. I think there is demand in the marketplace for what I need. Now you have to go test your assumption in the marketplace by trying to get gigs from people, different ways, different places, different types of industries. See what sticks. That is really the number one way. To narrow it down for you, and it's a process I go through in huge detail in my step-by-step guide to freelance writing success ebook, if you like really want someone to hold you by the hand and go step-by-step, is you look at what you've done in your life, your work experience, life experience, what within that would cross with a well-paid freelance writing niche like health, finance, technology, that type of thing, and just see where your most likely opportunity is and go that direction. So Bob also has volunteered to give some speeches, and we talked a little on the Facebook about him looking at speech writing as an idea, which I thought was a terrific idea. It's a great, really lucrative niche. So many heads of colleges and political figures and CEOs who hire speechwriters to write all their speeches. So, you know, if you have scripts of speeches that you've done, I would find someone you could volunteer to write a script for. You know, even if it's like a friend in Toastmasters or something, and start trying to build your portfolio in that. That's a super niche that I've always sort of felt dumb that I didn't get into, because I do have a spoken word, a traditional broadcast radio background, and, you know, I feel like I could do it, you know. But his other question was, Paul's other question was, he said, I'm intrigued by cause copywriting, which is like writing for nonprofits. And it's not a big focus for me and Linda because it tends to not pay very well. And I did a Google search on that phrase and got like two links. So I just don't think it's a huge market. You're really only looking at the major national charities and foundations that pay well for that. But if you're interested in it, you know, volunteer at some local nonprofit and, you know, take it from there and then pitch up. So, it looks like I have a bunch of questions in a row. I don't know if you want to skip to maybe these other ones of Alyssa's, just so it's not all the time. And then I'll give me time to go look up some links.
But we love it to be you. But yeah, I was just adding in Heidi's questions. So where are we? We're on Alyssa. Let me do a search.
Just go down to her second group of those.
Is this the process of writing the article with expert sources?
No, I go down to the next hunk. So we already talked about that. Oh, yes. Writing an article with expert sources. Where do you find them? Yeah, go for that.
Okay. So yes, can you walk us through the process of writing an article with expert sources? Where do you find experts and how do you contact them without sounding like some kind of sales calls or them deleting your email without reading it, assuming it's junk mail? So first I'd like to address that, which is if you approach with confidence and are businesslike and just ask for the interview, most experts are used to being approached by the media. And again, if you have a link to your website and or your LinkedIn so they know you're not a wacko, don't overthink it. in your subject line, just avoid anything that makes you sound like a PR person or a spammer, and you probably already know what that is. My go-to was always media interview request from, and then I'd put in the name of the market. That was it, really simple. I even had a little text expander for it. So if I typed in MMM, it would pop up media interview request for, and then I would just fill in the name of the publication. So that is not too difficult. As far as finding expert sources, I would like to caution everybody against relying solely on those source finding services like ProfNet and Harrow, although I think they merged, or anything like that, because those people are kind of self-selected. And just because they're there doesn't mean that they're the best in their field. And if you want to be the best writer getting the best gigs, you're going to need to find the best sources. And that means going out and doing the footwork. And depending on the topics you want to write about, those sources can be in different places. A good place to find good expert sources is through associations. So, for example, if you are writing an article on pet care, it could be the American Veterinary Medical Association, and you would contact them and ask if they have any spokespeople who can talk to you about topic X, and then they will kind of do the legwork for you. There are also think tanks, big medical facilities like Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, and so on. Universities are always really good, if there's a professor in a certain topic. And another tip is if you are looking for somebody, for example, with a published book, go to Amazon, type in the keywords of what you're looking for. For example, if I was pitching an article about resilience, I would type in resilience. And then in the little drop-down box, it usually sorts them by relevance, but you want to have it sorted by date published. So the ones that are going to be published in the future or at the top, and then it just travels down until, you know, there are ones that just came out, and you want the ones that are either coming out soon or just came out to kind of give your pitch a little bit of freshness and newsiness and relevance. So I know that's a lot of information, but I really encourage everybody to go out and just do the legwork to find the good experts. And I know it's scary, but again, they are used to being approached by the media. You can reach out to them directly, or you could go through the media or PR department of whatever the company or organization is that you're going for, and then they can help you.
Yeah, I threw them a link to all the sort of basic, a post with all the sort of basic types of these that we get. I want to grab just a couple of questions that were coming in. Robin said, I don't have any clips because I'm ghostwriting blog posts and I'm not allowed to use them. I would find out if you're really not allowed to use them, if you could get permission to maybe use one or two. If you haven't signed a non-disclosure, just really be sure. But yeah, if you don't have any clips yet, you don't have any clips yet. Remember that your writer website and the copy that you write on it is a clip that can get you website copywriting gigs. So it's all okay. You know, I recommend that people get a site up and just improve from there. And someone was asking about my ebooks, and they are for sale separately, except I think there may be Fear Not, I think, is here in the bootcamp. Look through the bonuses, and I think you'll find that one already in there. But like the step-by-step guide or freelance business bootcamp and stuff.
Okay, and I also want to mention, J.A., I got your emails. I put your questions in the queue.
Okay, awesome. And for online clips, do we take photos or screenshots? It's a good idea to do to archive, but I always think the best way to serve it is to actually just a link to where it lives live online, if it does, because that's your social proof that it really was published online. So
yeah. You'll probably want to grab a screenshot if you can.
It's a good idea because sites disappear, and mm-hmm. I've had it happen, and it's sad. So it's a good idea to run a screenshot of at least the top of a story, to just prove it really did happen. And actually, that American Express brand journalism project, they ended up taking that site down, and I'm super sad. Those were some great clips, and I think I did save some screenshots of them, so I am still able to show them. So yeah, you want to do that. Anyway, now let me scroll back to Deb Hansen, who used to do a column about local plants, animals, nature for a regional magazine and has about 15 clips, and she'd like to write similar articles for larger magazines. What angle can I pitch to make them relevant? Well, first off, it'll need to be your local ideas will have to be nationalized. You'll have to find something that is relevant or of interest in a main, you know, it's happening in more than one part of the country, not just in your town, is sort of the first step to taking it from a local story to a national story. But, you know, perhaps kudzu is invading lots more states, or, you know, there's an endangered animal that we all care about that you want to write about or something. So there's plenty of angles. And I will put in a link for you about developing a lot of story ideas. And I know someone else had asked about how to, what to do if ideas have already feel like they've been taken. You know, every idea has actually already been done, but you can still do it for a different market or with a slightly different angle. So don't worry about that. And I have a fun post about that where I iterate a story idea and show you how all different markets would do it. So here's that one. And I feel like you needed one more there, which is how to develop story ideas. And I'm sure Linda probably has posts she can throw in about that as well. And she says, I have a lot of experience about stories relating to retirement and want to know how to get into magazines like the ARP Bulletin and others. ARP is actually the most competitive market in the country. It's that or Costco Connection. But there are many other publications, you know, Senior Living. A lot of the big retirement home chains do magazines for their, you know, residents. And there's other opportunities. You can write for hospitals who have geriatric programs about retirement topics that relate to health, and lots of other ways to play it that would build your portfolio that might give you a better chance to get in at ARP would be sort of my take on that. I meet a lot of people who want to write for ARP, and I can tell you that I've pitched them more than once and nothing. Just they're super, super tough to get into. And so I also have one from Bob, because I have a tax background. I used to be Entrepreneur's tax columnist, and he says one of his fears are taxes. Our current taxes are pretty simple, but I still pay someone to do them, and I believe I'll have to pay things quarterly and look for deductions. That's true. He wanted to know if I have a resource on these kind of, you know, business nuts and bolts, and I do. It's an ebook called Freelance Business Bootcamp. So that's, I'll put in just my regular bootcamps, my regular ebooks tab where you can see all the ebooks. So I'm not going to sit around putting links to every single one, but you can see them all here. And you will not have to make quarterlies the first year. Quarterly tax payments are actually based on the previous year of freelance writing. So if you don't have a previous year yet, you just pay it at the end in April. And you just keep your expenses. Get a shoebox, throw them in, or get an app like Shoeboxed that allows you to take pictures of them and throw them in to a digital file. And Linda says she wants to say something there.
Yes, I want to mention, so you said I have little ambition when it comes to that and thinking this has to change. And I do want to mention that it is okay to not do your own taxes. As a writer or as a business person of any kind, you need to focus on what you're best at and what brings in the money. And if you have the resources to hire somebody to take care of some of those things that you don't want to do, that's fine. I've been using an accountant for the last several years. He charges $800 to do the yearly accounting, but he has saved us so much money and so much time that it is completely worth it. And there's absolutely no shame to not wanting to learn about the financial aspect of, you know, the accounting and doing your taxes. Like Carol was saying, as long as you keep your expenses and keep your records in order, somebody else can do the rest.
Yeah, and I totally pay someone to do my taxes, absolutely. I'm not remotely trying to figure that out myself. You know, tax law changes every year. You want to go memorize that, you know, 4-inch thick guide to the taxes? No thanks. So one the other thing Bob had to say was that he has a confidence issue because his background is in tech, corporate database type stuff, and he's tired of that and doesn't want to write about tech. I'm so sad to hear because it pays so well. And I really want to sort of make a last pitch to you to say, what about some other type of tech than the type you really grew up in? Because if you say you have a tech background, you can move around. I mean, there's robotics, biotech, there's lots of things. Tech is a huge umbrella. Maybe there's some other facet of it that you dig writing about, because it's just a great paying niche. He says, I have other interests, but how does one elaborate on these without a degree? Let's just be clear that no degree or certification in any particular industry is needed to write about that industry. I have written about
Nope.
robotics, business finance, real estate, just legal, insurance. I don't have a degree in anything, and I learned mostly as I went. So just get that out of your head. But so he, two of his interests were bowling, and I have to tell you, I looked up the bowling magazines, and there are so many. I'm giving you a link to a list of bowling magazines.
That is so awesome. But you
Isn't
know
that
what? Everybody
crazy?
here needs to know that anything you are interested in or any industry you were in has at least one magazine devoted to it. And I'm talking, I've written for some crazy magazines.
Yeah, and so his other interest is that he's lost 70 pounds and he's 30 pounds down from his goal. And I want to say, you go and teach my husband how to
Wow.
do it. And
Nice.
there, and he'd like to break into that arena of health and weight loss, especially for the 50 plus age perspective. So I was a little fascinated by that and looked up senior fitness and got a bunch of magazines also like Empower Age and Senior Living and stuff. So there is a niche there. So totally go for that. He's also an avid gardener, but I think other people are looking for degrees and certifications. No, there are some like that in horticulture, but many not. That I know many people who are garden writers who do not have a professional background. So you took these questions from Alyssa. Did we talk about how do you know if you're wasting your time on a subject that you want to pitch?
No, we did
I just
not.
want to say that you don't really. You won't. You will get a pretty quick sense though as you pitch of what gets a response. And somewhere we must have a blog post on the fundamentals of, pitch problems. That I guess that was in the course and you read it. That there's no news hook. There's no reason they have to rent it now, so they just never do. Do you have to research everything that's out there before you pitch? No, just what your target publication has done recently, whether they have already covered that subject. What kind of deadlines have you both encountered? This is an it depends answer. I used to be the queen of rush work. There's a lot of gigs out there where they want you to get up at 6 a.m. and write something by 9 a.m. about the headlines that have happened in the last 12 hours. So if you hate that, don't do that. Don't do that gig. I used to be the queen of last minute rush work because I would get good pay for it. And rush works should pay more. People, if you're taking rush work, please charge a lot, because there should be a premium on that. It's stressful. And now I kind of went the other way and I totally don't want anything like that. So I got this gig with my Forbes blog where they literally didn't care if I posted all four of my required posts for the month, all on the last day of the month. They totally didn't care when I published. And it was like 100% flexibility all month. I could do it whenever I wanted. So, if you want a lot of flexibility, maybe you're juggling around a full-time job, you look for those kind of gigs where maybe you can write in batches, you can write ahead, where they're good planners and can give you lots of time. I used to write for the LA Times real estate section. He would give me like 8 weeks to do everything. So, you want to go on to Dave's question?
Yes, so where are you? There you are, Dave. Most of my writing has been in areas which are not money rich, faith-based community services, nonprofits, or for organizations that do not have much money. How can I convince clients that my skills are transferable? Ooh, I love this question. And then you have a question about contracts we can get to next. And I would love for everybody to know that just because you have an expertise in one area doesn't mean you can only write for businesses and publications in that niche. There are lots of ways to transfer one idea, or should I say, tweak it to make it viable for all different publications and businesses. And I'd like to give an example. My husband works in the board game industry, and he's also written for board game publications, but he's also written about board games for magazines as diverse as Popular Science, Sheep Magazine, which is for sheep farmers, and also a publication for aquarium enthusiasts. I can't remember what the name is, but he would find games that are based on those things, like a game called Sheep or a game about fish, or for Popular Science, it was a game called Primordial Soup. So you can take an interest that you have and make it work for others. That said, it sounds like you're writing mostly for businesses and you want to get into a different type of business field that you're writing for. And if you, Carol, you call this like the simple addition rule, right?
Right. You take a type of writing you've done and a industry you know, but you haven't written that thing for that industry, and say, look, I have piece one over here and I have piece two over here. And you put them together and you get, I'm qualified to do this.
Yeah. And you have a really great, you have a really great pitch. So
yeah. And we all know this is possible, because otherwise none of us would ever break into new niches ever. It would never happen. And obviously we all continue to grow our and evolve our careers and move in other directions. Another sneaky one is you take a magazine and a topic you want, and then you write about a topic you already know for them. So like you take a trade for nurses, you want to break into writing about healthcare, and but you are a marketing expert and you write an article about how to market yourself well,
yes,
to get your best new nursing job. And now you're in the door and they've seen you're a good writer, and then you pitch them some health topics.
Actually, I've done that a lot too. I used to do a lot of pet writing, and I wanted to write a little bit more about travel. So I pitched an article to Cats Magazine, which I sold, on the cats of wine country. So I got to go to all the wineries and interview the cat owners. And then I sold one about destinations for cat lovers in Amsterdam. And I was already going on a trip to Amsterdam. So that is kind of now a travel writing credential, even though it's based on my knowledge and experience with cats.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just talking about, we're talking Lego robotics, and I'm talking about covering one of my favorite sporting events ever, belt sander drag racing, as a thing to get into. Anyway, right, transferable skills, we did it. Deb said, I'm worried that the things I'm interested in writing about, environment and nature, are not very well-paying gigs. Well, it depends on who you think of as the client within those. When I think of environment, I think there's a Department of Ecology, and there's government contract writing. I think there are a lot of companies that do environmental remediation and environmental consulting. You know, when they want to build a building, someone has to come and tell them whether they can, and if they have to get rid of the, you know, oil shale that's on there first or whatever. You know, it used to be a gas station. And, you know, nature, I mean, there's so many ways to play that. I mean, you could write about, you know, great things to do on a nature walk with your kids for a kids magazine. You know, the trick is thinking about better paying clients that would touch on the topics you're interested in. And, you know, I think the big hump to get over is realizing that if you want to get well paid, you're probably not, that's not necessarily the writing you're going to do about your favorite topic, but it might be in the neighborhood of it, you know? You know, I mean, I've written about like advanced washing machine technology and things. Mike, yes, we're coming up to your question. Lisa said, how vital is a webpage for a writer? Only if you want to get good gigs. Really, you're invisible without it. People think you're not serious at this point in the internet if you have no home base online where they can find you, particularly in terms of writing online. They're just like, oh, you don't get the internet. So that's the problem. If all you have is, you know, a profile you put up on Contently or on, you know, freelancer.com, you're just kind of one of the masses of thousands of writers who are relying on those platforms to serve them gigs in a race to the bottom on price. You just kind of don't position yourself for prorates without one. So you want to talk about Dave's
Oh,
fear of putting together
yes, I
an
love,
attractive.
yes. Dave's fear is putting together an attractive pitch or query. And let me tell you something. I'm not going to give a whole lot of instructions on how to put together a good pitch or query because there are books on that. I've written them. But I want to let you know that when I was first starting out, I sent pitches to Family Circle magazine, which, if you don't know, is a women's magazine aimed mostly, I'd say, at moms. And it was called Quick Dry Cheese: Why Advertisers Can't Spell. And Quick was Quick, you know, it was Dry Cheese, because I thought it was a really cool topic, you know. And if you know anything about the women's magazine, you know that is an absolutely ridiculous, horrible, awful topic. And I'm sure my pitch was even worse. But I continued pitching using the responses I got from editors to kind of guide me in my experimentation, like, okay, this didn't work and that did work. And eventually I ended up writing over a dozen articles for Family Circle and I became their highest paid writer. So your pitches at first might be really god awful, but you learn as you do them more than you can learn from thinking in books and worrying about it.
Yeah.
And I also want to say that volume is more important than, to some extent, than the quality of your pitch. If you have a pretty good pitch or an okay pitch and you send it out to 100 places versus the most perfect pitch in the world that you send to one place, you are definitely going to get an assignment with those 100 pitches from somebody who is going to bite.
Yeah, right
So
on.
I say just get out and send out your terrible pitches. Just keep sending them out.
All right, I want to take Bridges and then we're up to Mike. Is snail mail still used or is email preferred? I would say email is preferred and is what people are doing more commonly because we're all lazy and it's so easy to send email and cheap. But I can tell you that in Dentoo-X Income Accelerator, I have two mentees who have recently done direct mail packages and gotten great clients.
I've done the same.
Yeah, Linda has done it. The thing is, if everyone is doing email and you do snail mail, you stand out. Just like I just coached someone yesterday who is putting a welcome video on her writer website. I was like, oh my God, I don't think I have ever seen a welcome video on just a plain writer website. That's gonna like so differentiate you. You know, so part of the key is, you know, if you know what everyone else is doing, you might want to do something else that is a little rarer.
Yep.
In-person networking.
I'm going to post an article I wrote for
Yeah.
a copy blogger on snail mail pitches.
So Mike said, I've written over 2,000 blog posts on human resources. Great niche, Mike. I want to learn how to expand beyond my website and the ones I do for free. Am I in the right group? You bet. And HR is a terrific niche. It's one of those what we call universal niches, which means you could write a story about HR topics for trade magazines in every industry there is that has people management, you know, in retail, in legal, in nursing, in running your insurance brokerage. So that's the kind of thing where you could come up with one hot trend in HR and write an article that you could sort of resell and put a few freshen up the sources a little, but like take the same topic and just ride it and get a lot of assignments. So I'm loving HR. And of course, there are also trade magazines for human resource professionals where they all talk about the fine points of that all the time. So I'm loving that niche. So Heidi wanted to know about posting on LinkedIn Pulse, which is just, you know, their sort of free open blogging platform. I'm torn as it's free content, but maybe exposure.
Can I mention something really quick on that?
Yeah, go
Is
ahead. I have a couple thoughts as
are
well.
your potential clients that you're looking to reach on LinkedIn reading LinkedIn Pulse? And my view is that the types of clients that are out there looking to pay the kind of pay that you probably want, so really, you know, high rates, professional rates, are probably not out there looking at anybody's blog, email newsletter, LinkedIn Pulse posts, or anything else like that. And I might be wrong. I mean, Carol, do you?
Well, here's what I'm seeing, and I've been doing a lot of LinkedIn reviews with people. it, because we do in Dentuex, we consider your writer website and your LinkedIn profile sort of the two big pillars of your inbound marketing machine of, you know, the way you're going to get leads coming in to you without you having to do any marketing, which is the fun way and the way we all love. And what I see is if you do a few posts on Pulse, they're visible in your profile and they make your profile look kind of splashy and nice, especially if you've, what you're pulling in has had a graphic attached to it. So I used to be like, I don't know, you know, I do know people who have gotten awesome traffic and gotten a lot of attention. I mean, it depends on the topic you're going to write about. It, you know, it's a very competitive platform, bazillion posts going up a day. So you have to ask yourself how you'd stand out on it. But I think it can be worth working, writing two or three posts for Pulse. And also you can repost from your blog on Pulse. They don't have any rules against that. So you can recycle content onto Pulse. And I know tons of people are doing that and get a sexier looking LinkedIn profile. So
yeah, and I guess that depends on whether or not you already have a sexy looking LinkedIn profile, right? Because you can already put up your videos and your portfolio and everything else. So I would think that if you're maybe missing something, that would be worth it. But you know, I also want to mention, forgive a little bit of cross-marketing, but I'm working on a class called Volume Marketing, and it's all the point of it is that you should pick, like Carol was saying, the one form of marketing that you super love and that gets you results and focus on it. And I see a lot of people going, well, I'm going to do a LinkedIn Pulse here, and then maybe I'm going to pitch the Huffington Post for exposure, and then I'm going to go on Twitter, and then I'm going to write a pitch, and then I'm going to make a phone call. And I mean, it's great to experiment like that, but I think you need to work it to see if it's really going to work for you. So for example, in LinkedIn, instead of being like, I'm going to try one thing and see what happens, do on LinkedIn. Make LinkedIn your thing for a while if you think it's going to work for you, because that kind of mass quantity is what's going to get you to the top of any search and get people looking at you and bring in the results.
Yeah, absolutely. So you may need that, you know, or you may not. And yeah, totally agree with Linda about not doing 20 different forms of marketing a little bit. I like to see people do maybe 2-3 prongs of attack that they're going to really focus on for 3 to 6 months. That's what they're doing. And then you assess, okay, how'd that work out? Where did the best clients come from? You know, in my case, I found they all came from in-person networking and from sending queries and from appearing on really popular sites. So those became, and I, at the time I had been a regular troller of the online job boards, you know, the, you know, freelance writing gigs type places. And I found that all of the, my crappiest clients came from there, and I stopped doing that. So that's the basic drift. You do, and then you assess. I think we're up to JA's. How do you keep writing samples safe from filching when you post them on places like LinkedIn? I haven't heard anything about people having plagiarism problems from posting on Pulse myself. In general, you want to have the mindset of not fearing getting ripped off. Don't be up nights. You know, when I started posting for Copyblogger, they get ripped off so much. It's incredible. And immediately. And I was like, you know, I was like emailing Sonia Simone going, look at all these ripoffs of it. And they were like, we don't care. They look at the site and see if it has any traffic. And if it doesn't, they just move on and they don't care. Because you could spend so much energy hunting all of that and being paranoid about that. Just put your energy into creating more content and don't worry about it.
Yeah, and it's so rare, and I want to bring up a slightly different topic, which is that a lot of people are afraid that when they send a pitch to a publication, that that publication is then going to steal it and give it to another writer or do it in-house, especially if you give them a ton of information and research that they don't really even need you to do the story. And that happens so little. I mean, I've been writing for magazines for 20 years, and there's only one time where I am almost certain that happened out of hundreds and hundreds of pitches. And the thing is, a lot of people say, oh, I pitched Self Magazine on the best yoga poses for tension headaches, and now they have an article on it a month later. But these things are in the pipeline for months before they get published, and editors tend to get volumes of pitches on the same topic that everybody thinks is the most unique thing in the world. So if you think that a publication has ripped you off, most likely they haven't, and it's not something I would worry about. I wouldn't go putting out just half-assed queries and not giving a lot of information for fear of being ripped off, because then you're not going to get any assignments.
Yeah, I want to comment on JA's other comment from email that I'm writing for a living almost daily, very embarrassed to find out how hard I'm working for such a low rate. I don't want you to feel embarrassed, because first off, you got a lot of company. It's not like you are by yourself somewhere earning a little while everyone else is making a fortune. There are so many writers out there, thousands and thousands and thousands of them, writing for extremely, extremely impoverishing, should be illegal type of rates. And that's a negative self-talk thing. Oh, I'm a bad person. I made mistakes. No, you started writing and you found a way to get paid for it. We have people on here who don't have any clips yet. So you've got some, what you're going to want to do if you do this as a freelance writer is build yourself up and be your own cheerleader and give yourself credit for the good you've done and not sit around thinking about mistakes you've made. You know, Linda and I would be here for hours if we had to talk about things we think we do.
But I also want to mention that J.A. says, I'm writing for a living almost daily. And to me, that's saying you are making a living at this. So you might not be earning the rate you want to yet, but if you are earning a living off of this, kudos to you. A lot of people are not. And now you can work on building up to the rate you want.
Yeah. So, look in the mirror and say, hey, I'm good. I have skills. I found paying work. Make a list of things, of positives that you can say about what you've accomplished to date, and like look at them every day instead of going, oh my God, I'm doing it all wrong. You know, I'm sure I'm totally doing it wrong. I can tell you that. I don't have a degree. I didn't go to J school. You know, let's not make a list. So Regina says, I have an idea for my website. I'm a licensed cosmetologist, and I was thinking writing an ebook on hair care so I can have a book linked to my site. So are you running a blog about cosmetology? If so, an ebook about hair care would be terrific. That would probably get you some subscribers. And she says, is writing an ebook on a subject I'm familiar with a good idea to link to my website? I need to do something to get started. Well, what you might think about is who your ideal client is, and there is a marketing strategy where you create some freebie that, gets names on a list that you could then reach out to with marketing. And, there's people who do really well with that. And also, if you want to write ebooks for clients, then you have an ebook sample. So, there's things to be said. Apparently, we are losing Linda because her son's school has closed because of frozen water.
Yes, we've been getting emails all day that their pipes are frozen, they have no water, and if they can't get it fixed, they have to, by law, close immediately. I've been keeping an eye on my email. My husband is not available. So I'm going to have to go run and pick him up from his school because it is not a school with buses.
No right problem. Now. I'm going to pick up the few final questions that I
think there's like
here.
Two left. Yeah, there's
we're
only
almost
two left, and so appreciate everybody being here, and I can't wait for the next one, and I will see you on Facebook. Bye, everyone.
Okay, no problem. And so we had one from someone whose name didn't come through that just said, what if we are accepted by several editors when we send out the same pitch? So first thing to know about that is it almost never happens, because really each idea kind of has a home where it belongs, and it's going to find that home, and it's just unlikely. And this relates to Brigitte's, how do I get past the no simultaneous submissions rule? You just send simultaneous submissions. Just totally ignore that. None of us do. The old days where you sent a submission and then you waited 8 weeks to hear back and then you sent it out again, you can't earn a living that way. That is not a thing anymore. They would love you to only send it to them exclusively, but you have to eat. And a lot of ideas are too time sensitive. You can't wait 8 weeks and then send it again and then send it. It'll be outdated. So that just doesn't work. What you can do to protect yourself against getting two yeses, which Linda has actually had happen once, and she just told the second one, hey, you're too late. And they said, oh no, we'll have to be faster next time. So it's no biggie. But you can also prevent this from happening by slanting your pitches slightly different ways so that they could both be done by multiple, by you could get two yeses and write both of the articles. So, you know, that's a question of looking at, you know, all the meat you've got in a story and deciding if there's maybe two totally different angles you could tease out. And if you look at that one on how to iterate ideas that have already been done, you'll see an exercise in what I mean, where I talk about different ways that publications covered Angelina Jolie's double mastectomy and ways you could still write about it today and find new angles on it. So, and then Mark's question is, how well do you have to know a publication before you pitch it? You want to have some decent familiarity or you're probably going to waste your time. You want to know what, particularly if they have recently done the topic that you're pitching, you want to know if they publish topics like the topic you want to pitch and if they do it a lot. And if so, you want to look at the bylines and compare them with the masthead and see if it's the kind of thing that they do with staff writers or it is the kind of thing they do with freelancers. I think that's all the questions I have. If there is anything I have missed, can you just like repost it right now in chat? Otherwise, we're going to begin to wrap it up. We're hoping that people will be, you know, getting into at least module two in next week, and we'll get through all the materials before our final call, which is on January 31, as I recall. And yes, we will send you notices about all that. And this conversation totally continues over on the Facebook page. Let me put in the link to that again for anyone who has not already joined us over there. It's not like you just have this 1 hour. The secret sauce of this is that you have all of each other and you can ask questions of us all week on the Facebook. Alyssa has a great question. Will you be reviewing our homework or is it just an exercise? What we want, Mike, I'll go a preview in the Facebook group right after this call. What we want is for you to post your progress and talk about it on the Facebook group with each other so you can share those experiences and just get accountability for actually doing it. Yeah, we're hoping that you're not just going to say, oh, yeah, I totally did some of that, but that you're going to come on and say, oh, my God, I went to a networking meeting and I said I was a freelance writer and over, and it was so empowering. And, you know, we're hoping that hearing each other's experiences of doing these exercises and getting over these humps of, you know, sending out an email because it might have a typo and, you know, announcing that you're a freelance writer to people at a networking event, that this will be, you'll all help each other move up and get over, you know, whatever it is that has seemed insurmountable. So that is the point of doing this homework with the Facebook group support. And I'm dying to see everybody do it. And we would, if anybody does all 10 things, I don't know, Linda and I may do something crazy. If anybody does all 10, like, I don't know, I'll probably have to give a coaching session to anybody who really does all 10 of them. So I've thrown down the gauntlet now, and I will see you guys over on the Facebook. Thanks for great questions.